Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. I'm Eric Olson. It is time once again for America's Most Haunted Radio. And we just keep coming up with more and more different, interesting, and unusual directions for the show to head in. Typically, we're fairly focused on the paranormal, specifically in terms of ghosts or cryptids or UFOs or this or that. Oh, my goodness. That was some thunder. I got my windows open because, of course, the air conditioning's been out for 2 full weeks now. The guy's finally supposed to come and fix it tomorrow. So I kind of have no choice but to have the windows open. And we've had storms just raging through northeast Ohio. And that was about the loudest thunder I have heard in some time. Could you guys hear it?
I could hear it. In fact, yeah, we've had power problems off and on here since the storm started, so it's pretty loud over here.
All right, and for those of you who have been living in a cave, that is the world-famous haunted housewife back from a life of luxury. She's been luxuriating.
Yes.
She's been rolling around in sunshine and dollars for
weeks,
if not months. Teresa Argy, welcome, Teresa.
Yes, making Disney a little bit more rich because, you know, they needed my money too. But I am back. I've been off for a couple weeks, missed the last couple shows. Did listen to them, though. Great show. Sorry I missed them. But I'm very excited about tonight.
I am too. So let's talk about who we have with us. I've done all this prologue and haven't given any information at all. We have Yogi Akal on with us. He is an expert in working with the total being, an accomplished yogi, Sikh minister, social commentator, widely sought-after consultant, counselor, and teacher. He is also a dynamic speaker, having conducted hundreds of programs throughout the United States, Europe, Canada, Latin America, and the Caribbean. Yogi Akal is the world master of yogic numerology, a topic of which I know nothing. So this will be very, very interesting. He is the foremost authority on a specialized branch of yogic teachings known as 10-body yoga and is the developer of Laser Touch, a unique yogic system of healing. Lots of other very interesting bio info. Please read the page right there on the good old Blog Talk Radio page about our friend the yogi. But welcome, Yogi Akal.
Thank you very much. I could hear the thunder, and I'm in Toronto.
Well, that's what I was asking, but I hadn't introduced you yet, so it was a bit presumptuous of me. But you may have heard it live across the lake, you know?
I could certainly hear it from your window.
God, that was really loud.
I love thunder.
My wife is like, and then my daughter, because, of course, it's hereditary, they are so super jumpy. I mean, just like anything. What was that? What's that? Are you sneaking up on me? No, I'm just living and breathing. But I'll tell you, I'm rarely kind of startled, but that one was so loud that I was momentarily caught off guard. Anyway, once again, we have nature perhaps intervening.
Well, how's that for atmosphere? That's an interesting
wondrous
atmosphere as we get started on this.
It's wondrous. I'll tell you what. Let's just go because I rarely profess to such ignorance because I am a polymath and I'm a wondrous human being. But virtually everything that you are great at and that you teach, I know little to nothing about. So can we just maybe start at the very beginning? When we were talking just for a brief moment before the show started, you actually, this is something you weren't born into. You made a conscious decision to become a Sikh some 40 years ago. Is that a good place to start with that?
That's right.
What
that's right. In the 1970s. In the 1970s, I was very involved in working with people. I was in the communications business, and I was doing a lot of service work in the community. And there was just something missing, and I started looking for what that would be. And I ended up moving into an organization that was teaching yoga. And I thought, well, let me just try this out and see if this can add something to my life. And as it turned out, after a short while, I decided that this was the direction I needed to go in permanently in my life. So I took that on as a path for my own education and also for my own spirit. It was a choice, and when I look back on it, you know, it's destiny. That's the way things work. It was exciting.
And what?
And let me tell you too that in that era, in the 1960s and the 1970s, many of the great teachers of the great ancient systems from China, Japan, India, and that whole part of the world came to the West, and they were teaching martial arts, Tai Chi, Taekwondo, Aikido, all kinds of different yoga. And now, interestingly enough, much of that orthodox system, the mastery of that system, is not as strong in the East, and now people who they have trained, who are now my age, are going back to the East and teaching them. So it's a very interesting process of the East going to the West and the West going back to the East over two generations. Very exciting.
That is fascinating. You know what that reminds me of? Because I was just talking about it in a completely different context. It's kind of it's kind of a cultural history, but specifically music. Because if you think of the music, let's go all the way back to Africa and the African rhythms and the polyrhythms. And then, of course, they made their way to the New World, unfortunately, primarily via slavery. And then we had hundreds of years of the blending of the African polyrhythms, African tonalities with Western music. And now there's a new form of music in Africa that blends it all and takes the hundreds of years ago African music that became partially at least Westernized and has now returned and has been folded into contemporary African music. So kind of a similar, perhaps analogous.
Welcome to the 21st century. This is where we are now because for the first time in the history of the world, really the history, included the unrecorded history, we are one planet. It's never happened before. There have been grand civilizations, far more advanced than we've ever been, but they've been localized. And now we're one planet. We can actually go up and see the planet. We, at this moment, can broadcast live anywhere in the world. It's just never happened before. So now when something happens in America, it also happens in Africa. When it happens in Africa, it happens in Iceland. And more and more and more through this century, we will see that happening, which means that many of the problems that we've had, we will all face together and fix, and then we will take the next step moving off the earth.
Back to your origins, I'm really interested. That was certainly a time of seeking, no pun intended, and it was a time when people were, you mentioned all the masters of various techniques and approaches and philosophies coming here, and of course you had the Beatles. Going a little further back, the 60s, getting so involved in the, quote-unquote hippie movement.
Some of them were fraudulent. Some of them were fraudulent, and some of them were very honorable. But, I'll tell you, for example, how I got started in numerology. Way back in the day, again, more than four decades ago, I was trying to prove somebody wrong. I was living with someone who at the time was studying macrame and batik and all kinds of far out things, to use the expression of the era. Everything was far out. They were looking at numerology and astrology. I thought they were very annoying and irritating and ignorant. So to prove them wrong, I went to the public library and I started to study up on numerology and related sciences, and I became much more annoying than they ever were. I learned what it was, and I began to recognize what it really was and not just the superficial value of it, but what it really meant, where it came from, none of the superstition or the symbols of it, but what its origin really was and how to use it. And then in the 1990s, I was introduced to the yogic system, which is completely different from anything else, but it's the same numbers. You're still using numbers. And I found that to be fantastic. So you going through the lineage system, in other words, in the old days, this is the way things were done. It was passed from master to master to master. So this system was considered to be a secret, as were many of the yogic traditions. And then it was passed to me. And my job is to not do that again, to make sure the world has that available, because it's the 21st century. No more secrets, no more hierarchy.
Why don't we go into that then? I was just wondering how you ended up with the various options, with all of those philosophies and whatnot out there, how did you wind up kind of specifically I assume that
I would have to say it's
Seek
Destiny.
Was the first decision?
Of all the places I could have landed in my life, back where I landed. So the only answer I can give you is it must have been what it must have been. Que sera, sera. All
it,
the other
it's
options
just the way
there.
It
I
was.
I did explore a lot of options. You know, in those days, that's what one did. There were a lot of options to explore. And, you know, this was a time of consciousness changing in the world in the 1960s and 1970s. And everybody was looking for ways to make changes. It was gay rights and feminism and the shift in consciousness and politics, the war. I remember when I went to school in my senior year, all the guys with me were being drafted, and every day there were announcements about who had died in Vietnam. So this was, you know, this was a very powerful time of the draft. Growing, if you had long hair, you know, you could be thrown out of school. It's almost unimaginable now.
Oh, I am almost that old. I graduated high school in 75. I was young to be graduating, but you know, I just missed, you know, people who were brothers who were just 2, 3, 4 years older than I was, you know, were getting drafted. And it was a very, very tense time. And wow, you know, no one was happier than literally my class. I mean, graduating 75, then with the war ending. In fact, I think I literally maybe my month or something. I mean, it was super close where I was at the very beginning of the first people who didn't have to register. So I never even registered, although, you know,
so,
I was
so this was
that
a time
close.
Of great, great change of consciousness that, you know, came from even things like the Beatles. I mean, there was a huge change in consciousness, and we're going through it again now. Now we're at a place in the world where, as one world, with the speed of things and the amount of information that we have available, physical illness will be cured in this century. All that's left is dealing with our mental selves, better communication. War is, it's there, but within a couple of hundred years, it will be obsolete. It's too dangerous now. And we have no choice but to become more intelligent, which means more peaceful. Peace is not easier. Peace is much harder. But you have to have a little bit of sophistication to deal with it, and that's where we're going as a world. And that's why things, you know, even 15 years ago when I was doing yoga and teaching yoga, people would make fun of it all the time. If I said, well, I'm a teacher of yoga teachers, and they would say, oh, you put yourself into a pretzel, right? Hey, towelhead. And that was the joke of the time. But now, if I tell somebody that I'm a yogi, they say, oh, you know, I have migraines. What can I do about that? Or, yeah, of course, I do hot yoga. My grandmother does yoga. We do have yoga at the office. But, you know, I've got high blood pressure. What do I do about that? A lot of the vets that are coming back from the East are now taking yoga as a way of dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's no longer a fringe thing to do. Not only does everybody do it, but it's being used as a form of legitimate therapy. So things change. It's the same with numerology, where it was considered very fringe and a little bit weird. You know, even tonight we can have some fun with it. It'll be entertaining. It's considered the original yoga, the original counseling system, and that's what it's for. It's to counsel and advise people.
Yogi, I have a few questions, and bear with me, because I, like Eric, know nothing about numerology. And as far as yoga goes, I take yoga classes, and for me, yoga is basically a form of exercise, which I think a lot of people view that, but they don't know the little deeper meaning of what yoga can do and how it can be used for meditation. And although that's the hardest part for me, is trying to concentrate and meditate. But there's more to it than that, and a lot of us are ignorant of that, and I myself don't know much about it, and I know nothing about numerology. So this is very
fascinating. There are 12 main forms of yoga, and each of the forms has their own specialty. For the Kundalini yoga, which is very complete, you have Hatha yoga, which is very physical, and was used thousands of years ago to help people who had a hard time staying in their bodies. You have the Laya Yoga and the Nad Yoga and the Raja Yoga. These are all different styles, traditions, and lineages of yoga, and they have a specialty in the enlightenment of a person or the healing of a person. And that's where we are today. We have these forms that exist side by side. And most people, especially in the West, do practice yoga as a form of exercise. But more and more and more, they're realizing that it does more than that. Just like any system, when you start using it well.
Right. The benefits are tenfold when you really get into it. But how is numerology and yoga connected? What is the connection?
That's a great question. Yogic numerology is considered the original yoga, because what would happen before recorded history? This is, again, when everything was passed on through word of mouth. There were no books. The diagnosis of what was happening with a person would be done by somebody who would be like me. Someone would be learned in this particular field. They would look at a person very holistically, and then they would prescribe what would be best for that person at that time, something that has to do with their lifestyle or their nutrition or their direction in life, and help them to make a change or plan ahead. A lot of marriages were arranged and treaties were organized based on this. None of it is superstition. It's all based on a map of life that you can change, and that's the whole point of it. This was the original yoga, and it is considered to be the counseling wing of yoga. You know it is exercise. You know that there is a meditation form that goes with yoga. There's also a counseling form of yoga, and that's what this is called. It's a Kharjantri, which means the calendar of numbers, also known as the counseling system of yoga. It's the most ancient system known and the most accurate.
I think there's a lot to be said about numbers and numerology and math, which even scientists believe that is the universal language, and it's the one true thing that people can count on. And
Except for French. Yeah, the universal language of love,
yes,
which is French, and then there's numbers. We have to go in the right order here.
Well,
I'm from Quebec, so I have to honor that.
Oh, there you go. I took French in school and probably couldn't speak a word of it. But a lot of people fear numbers. I myself am not great with math, never was. It can be a scary thing. So maybe that's why numerology is something I never really looked into too much, because just the whole thing with numbers, when I deal with numbers...
It's very easy. Numerology is very easy. It's not heavy math. I wouldn't do it if it was heavy math. I'm not a mathematician. And I think one of the reasons why numerology has been so fringe is that for many years it was associated with things that are superstitious.
Right.
The number 13, 666. There was a lot of ritual around numbers, all of which is nonsense. It has nothing to do with numerology, but a lot of books were written in that area and describing it as symbols. Numbers don't have a vibration. They don't have an energy. They don't have symbolic meaning. They can be used that way, and kind of as a language, but that's not the purpose of numerology. The purpose of numerology is the enlightenment of your life. It's one of the roadmaps you have. If you're in Cleveland and you want to know how to go to Miami, well, you're starting from Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to change. You might decide to drive, walk, run, fly, or change your mind to go somewhere else, but you're still starting from Cleveland. And that's what your birthday represents. It doesn't have any ritualistic or superstitious value. It's the point of departure, whether it's for a company, a country, a relationship, or, of course, a person. And that's gauged by their birth, when they first appear. That's the point of beginning or departure.
Wow.
And then your birthday lays out a roadmap, but it also answers five key questions. Who am I? Why am I here? What do I have to learn? What do I have to do? And how do I change my life? And when we look at two birthdays together, then we can take a look at how people can better communicate, how their timing fits, and what, not their compatibility should they be together, but sort of a percentage, a little thermometer of what to expect. And, of course, what we're doing on the radio tonight is for entertainment, because if we're inviting callers, we'll only have a couple of minutes for each person. But still, it will be impactful.
Awesome.
Interesting. Can you would you reserve that then for the process, say, with a caller, or can you give us a little more background, kind of, you know, how does this actually transpire? I mean, can you give us a little bit of the nuts and bolts of
sure.
how you
and
where
bolts.
The numbers come from beyond the first one
sure.
being birth, which certainly makes sense?
Yeah. Well, and I, if we can open the lines and see if anybody wants to call, and I can give you some examples, and I can do it for you as well. The idea is that you have your birthday, which is divided up and laid out as a formula, a very simple formula. You have the month of your birth, the day of your birth, the year of your birth, the last two digits of the year of your birth, and your whole birthday. It's five key numbers. And from that, it's very simplistic right now. There's 108 calculations plus a bunch of cycles. But I've been doing this for decades, so I do it very, very fast. But you look at it and you set out what I would call a map. You can see it. You can see the direction of somebody's life. The beauty of the 21st century, the exciting part about the 21st century, is that everything's up for grabs. Right up until the tail end of the last century, we really were governed to a certain extent by fate. People were pretty much stuck with what they had, and they really had to fight if they wanted to make a change in it. That's not where we are today. Everything is open for change. Everything. Especially at the beginning of the century, everybody's wanting change. And as we move forward, 20 or 30 years from now, we won't be able to recognize what we have today. The environment is changing, the globe is changing, the sky is changing, our way of life is changing far more than it's ever done in history. And now what we need to do is make sure that our nervous systems keep up. Our mind is fine. The body's fine. It still stays. But if the nervous system isn't solid, then it's freaky. I used to do a lot of programs with young people in schools, all the way from pre-kindergarten all the way up to university. And I would ask at the beginning of every class, who has trouble sleeping? And the percentage was 100%. In every room, whether it was 1,000 children in an auditorium or 15 kids, the same number would go up. And it wasn't because of the higher divorce rate or because of their nutrition. Those are important things, of course. It was the general noise, the just general volume of information available. Nobody wants to reduce that. It's fantastic that we have that information available. What a world we live in. But your nervous system has to be able to match it. If it doesn't, then it's overwhelming. And if it does, it's exciting. And that's one of the, I think, one of the reasons why things like yoga are popular these days, not just to look pretty in tights, but the breathing techniques in particular help people with their nervous systems. And that kind of calm is not just to relax from stress, but to feed the nervous system so you can deal with the world. Those are my two cents.
Very interesting. It seems like, again, this is so outside, from such an outsider position, but it seems like a key, to me, aspect of yoga is to be centered. How does that fit in
sure.
with all of this?
Here's the definition of relaxed. People talk about relaxing all the time. I want to relax. I need to relax. Well, let me explain what relaxation is. The definition of relaxed is to be awake, aware, alert, centered, that magic word you just said, conscious, prepared, and present in the midst of anything and everything. It's not the same thing as taking a nap. It's not the same thing as being tired. Relaxed is being able to be centered in no matter what happens. And for that, once again, you need strong nerves. I've counseled people for 40 years, people who run governments and corporations and people who deal with their lives on any level. And the problem's always the same. If your nerves are weak, then everything seems like a big problem. If your nerves are strong, the problems are much fewer. There's not as many problems. So that's one of the keys to the development of our human experience and our human strength, is stronger nerves. We're vibrating faster these days. look at us. We're in two different countries communicating on the Internet. Never happened.
It is amazing. It's easy to take it for granted, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do in the course of a conversation just kind of take a step back and go, "My God, I'm talking to so and so who is in this place, and we're speaking over these little devices, and it all ends up connecting in a computer somewhere and then being beamed back to us all so that we can communicate and then make this available to the world at large.
You know, I
it really
teach numerology online. I've set up a course so that people can learn it, but only for those who are really serious and want to learn it really thoroughly. It's a 2-year online program. And the people who are in the program are from all over the world. So when we do the occasional webinar, there are people from every country who are communicating at the same time about one subject. And it's always amazing that we do, like you said now, take it for granted. Oh, yes, Japan's on the line along with Ecuador. It's fantastic. But if your nerves aren't strong, I know I'm really pushing this point tonight. If your nerves aren't strong, that doesn't feel so good. After a while, you go, I don't know. It's too much. And that's what happens to kids. Kids know the difference between stress that they can put their finger on and that white noise. Stress you can put your finger on is somebody just bullied me. I don't like my friend. My friend just insulted me. My mother just got divorced from my father. Somebody died. I don't feel good. I'm in puberty, whatever it is. When you can put your finger on it, that's one kind of stress. But there's another kind of stress, which is called the blue gap or white noise. And that's just general information. You can't put your finger on it at all. It's just a lot. And when your ecosystem, your personal ecosystem isn't strong, that doesn't feel good. And when it is strong, it's very exciting. And I want to encourage the exciting part. Because we're living in a century where change is our natural order of things. And what an opportunity. There's so many changes that can happen so quickly in everybody's individual life, in relationships, in the way we see the world. Can you imagine this? It's 1400s. And you wake up in the morning knowing for sure that the world is flat. And if you swim too far, you will fall off. And somebody says, you know what? We just discovered it's round. And we can prove it. I don't know what that does. I can't imagine what type of stress that is when you discover something so fantastic, but it messes up your world.
Undermines your worldview.
And isn't that exciting today? Because that's happening almost every day now.
You're right. That's a great point. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. And, of course, I'm going to turn this around to the a little bit more of a paranormal approach. What you were talking about, centering and relaxing, when I'm on investigations, and especially when I'm with people who are maybe new to doing any sort of paranormal investigating or spirit communication or anything like that, and they find it very hard to relax and very hard to be focused. And I think that doing something like yoga or being into learning a little bit about numerology would help with not only your communication with the people around you and your interaction with the world around you, but also being able to communicate spiritually or being more balanced with your spiritual life as well as your physical life, because a lot of people are stressed out. We go to people who think they're having their house is haunted or they're having some sort of spiritual problems or whatever, that can be very stressful. And the first thing we tell people is you got to get your stress level down and you got to learn to relax a little bit because your emotions are just making things worse. And I think it's very hard these days for people to relax. But I think that would be a great tool for anybody in my field who tries to do any sort of, even for praying, it doesn't even have to be a paranormal thing, even just to be able to pray and to have that power and to be able to be one with your universe or your higher power, whatever it may be, not only help you in your everyday life, but help you with your spiritual life, too. I find it very fascinating. And
Technique, practice, and anatomy of numerology is called Das Prakash, which means 10 bodies. Das means 10. Prakash means radiance or body. So there are 10 different aspects of a person that you analyze and diagnose and prescribe with. And one of them is called the arc line. And the arc line, you see it in paintings. It looks like a halo around somebody's head. You see it in all the biblical type tableaus, where you see a little line and a light around somebody's head. That's called the arc line. Everyone has one. It's a really very thin membrane that just is like an arc over your head. When that arc is strong, it means your immune system is strong. When it's not strong or when it's jagged in some way, it means your immune system is off. And when that immune system is off, it's not just your physical immune system, it's also your relationship to the whole universe. And that's one of the things you look to correct when you are using this type of a healing system. The extension of that is the human aura, which is the electromagnetic field.
Is that the arc line isn't visible? I mean, or is it visible to certain people and not visible to other people? This is fascinating to me.
It's not that it's visible to some and not visible to others. It is visible, but not everybody sees it. And it doesn't mean you're more spiritual if you do. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that. Do either one of you play music?
Eric?
Yes.
Okay, I don't. So if you play music, to me that's magic. If you can move your fingers on a guitar and talk at the same time, I don't get it. I don't know how you do that. If you can play piano with two hands, read music, and sing, I don't understand how you do that. To me, it's magic. And this is very similar, that there are elements to any human experience that through practice you develop mastery. It's not something that you're not more spiritual, you're just practiced. So the arc line, just like the human aura, can be seen, it can be felt, it's there. When you look at the human body, most of the time you're not looking at the blood inside. Most of the time when you look at your body, you're looking at the skin and you imagine what's under it. We think, I got lungs and a heart, I'm pretty sure about that. I think there's muscle under there, I can feel it. But unless I cut myself, I don't see it. So that whole world inside the body is not visible unless you cut it. There's a whole world just outside the body, like the arc line, like the luminescent subtle body, like the radiant body that is very much like the sun, and of course like the electromagnetic field. Everything that moves has an electromagnetic field. When you study that, you can actually improve it. You can make that electromagnetic field stronger. You can make that arc line stronger. You can increase that radiance. And I think that's one of the beauties of where we live today, is that we have the opportunity to know ourselves with this new vocabulary and strengthen ourselves in all of these ways.
Long and we have the option. We're not being called witches, at least unless we live in Papua New Guinea or certain parts of India. Or anyway, that's part of what I've been covering is just all these attacks on people. I'm sure some of it is, genuine in terms of motivation. Obviously, there's nothing legitimate about attacking, killing people because you're afraid of their sorcery. But anyway,
one of the things that people are afraid of more than anything else is what they refer to as happiness. The fact is, everybody is born happy. It's your birthright. It's what you're born with, like the skin on your body. And you're responsible for its maintenance. Happiness is not an emotion. It's a state of mind. And you're responsible for that. And very often what happens is people are afraid of it, because that means they have to be taking responsibility for themselves. Often what happens, and I'm sure you have experience with this because you deal in this sort of parallel and paranormal field, very often when somebody is born, they're born very sensitive. Two-thirds of folks are born with a little extra sensitivity, more than they ever were before. That doesn't mean that other people aren't sensitive, but like some people have a better singing voice, some people are a little bit more sensitive. And because that makes other people uncomfortable, even as a baby they try to turn it down a little bit. They go, the fact that I see through everything, that I just know what's happening, intuitively feel it all, that seems to make the nurse uncomfortable. That seems to make my mother kind of weirded out. My father takes a step back. What's that all about? So the baby starts to turn it off out of generosity. And then in their 20s and in their 30s, they wonder why they're having these odd bouts of fear, why they feel insecure about themselves, when really it's just that powerful knowledge base, the genius they already have, that cannot be turned off. That's the phenomenal part about where we are today. The whole world is going through this conflict. Are you awake or not awake? And that's the only question over the next 50 years. You either have an experience where you are awake or you have an experience where you're not. And if you are awake and you have the nervous system to support it, then you have to create change in your own life, in your own relationships. Relationships used to be duty. It used to be the only reason for a relationship was for practicality. Now the purpose of a relationship is excellence. There's a big difference. It used to be you have to be committed to support the community. Now, and that's really not the case anymore. Now it's for spiritual excellence. What a fantastic opportunity we have now.
Why do you think all this has come together? It seems like we're really at a point where there's this nexus of all these different kind of arcs, to use one of your phrases, coming together at the same time. Was that preordained? Is it just chance?
There are stages of the world. There are stages. Some people call it the New Age, the Aquarian Age. The Bible is predicted. Every culture and every approach to civilization has said that around this time there's a big shift. And there is, and there has to be. We as human beings have reached a point where, hey, we can be a lot more sophisticated, so why would we want anything less? So that's where we are today, and we have this century. We have 100 years in front of us that will change more than we've ever changed in history. Very exciting to be part of that.
It really is.
Even though I'm only seeing the beginning of it.
Well, and it's not just in spirituality even, use a broad phrase, it's in science too. Look at all the changes in physics.
Science will change everything.
Is happening.
Science will change everything. And you know, I don't like the word spirituality myself. I think everybody is spiritual. We're all just trying to figure out how to be human and what that means. I don't think any of us are trying to become spiritual. You're already born that way. That's who we are. But what does it mean to be human, and what are we doing with that? How do we advance that? How do we learn more about that capability? That's very exciting.
Where are we headed?
Well, I think we're headed towards a climax. And I think that's in between 2038 and 2049. I think that's the time when we're going to take stock of ourselves as a collective humanity, and there'll be some changes on the earth and changes in the way we see things. And I don't think it has to be catastrophic. It doesn't mean that the earth is going to shift on its axis and go the other way and everybody falls off. That may happen. That might be an easy, fast way to deal with things, but I don't think that's what we're doing. I think there will be more of a general consensus, and I think it'll take just a couple more decades to get there.
Not all changes are negative changes, and I think a lot of people just fear change in general and think that especially a big change would be something negative, and I think that they're very fearful of a future that may entail some changes that might be uncomfortable, if not frightening for them. So I have a positive outlook on it. I'm not too nervous about it. There isn't a whole lot I can do, so I try not to stress about it. But, Yogi, we do have someone in the chat room who's given a birthday. If you were going to do a little numerology demonstration for us, whenever you're ready. I do have – he can't call in, but I do have his
– Okay, what's the birthday?
It's July 14th, and you need the year, too?
Yes, please.
Sorry, Joe, 1945.
Okay, and it's helpful if they have a question. That way I can make it practical for them. But for now, just give me – I'll do a little bit of an overview here. Okay. Well, the first thing to look at is timing. That's the key to everything, timing. So for this person who's gone into the chat room, there's a balance that is happening this year, but there's also a lot of endings. Now, the good news about endings, the good news is that it clears the slate. Not, you know, endings are not necessarily bad. It means that you get to go through your trunk, your closet, your glove compartment, that cabinet in the kitchen that you never clean out, and just get rid of the things that you don't need anymore. And that includes attitudes. If there's something you don't need, it's time to say goodbye. And if it's something you do need, it's time to clean it. If somebody needs something, be available to them. I'm addressing it to this person here. This is a year really of their destiny. When they shine, they love to give. You know, people say, I give and I give and I give and I get nothing back. That's not giving. That's just a business deal, which has its own place, its own context. But for this person, giving is their priority. And I would suggest that this be a year of that giving. They've had so much pain in their life already. Now it's a time for that great intelligence to shine through. A very kind person.
You know, I do know this person personally, and you have described him to a T. I swear. It sounds like you know him. He's an amazing guy. He's very generous, very giving, very intelligent, and he puts up with a lot of unnecessary crap from people sometimes. And he's very good-natured about it. That was amazing.
You talk about fear. That human beings have three basic fears that motivate them. One is the fear of loneliness. One is the fear of boredom. And the other is the fear of death, also called, as you said very wisely, the fear of change.
Mm-hmm.
And it motivates people. They're afraid of loneliness. They'll do anything not to be alone. Afraid of boredom, anything, including chaos, to not be bored. And afraid of change, standing still. But the fact is that fear is just a representation of feeling limited. And when you feel limited, you have to ask yourself, why am I lacking trust or faith in my life? When you can correct the trust and faith, I'm not talking religion, I'm talking about life, then you have fewer limits, self-imposed limits. When you have fewer limits, then you're not afraid anymore. Because when you're afraid, you have no choice but to become angry. So it's one of the first places to look. This person is not dealing with that. But I think, as you said, in a way right now, we're sort of on the cusp of, are you afraid to move forward in the world or not? You know, when you see the demonstrations around the world now, fewer people are afraid. More people are pushing for change than wanting to stand still.
Wow. Yeah, I think people are so afraid of change that it's almost like they're not living their lives. They're afraid of change, and they react with sometimes violence and sometimes just self-destructive attitudes, and it's really sad. I don't think it's necessary, but you know, we're all guilty of it at some point. I know I am. I mean, I things that I'm not sure about, especially when it comes to anything with my family, you know,
right.
Makes me nervous, very nervous, mm-hmm. Worry about the future. So,
are you next, Teresa, or am I?
Oh, go, Eric, go. I want to hear this.
Go ahead. What's your
I am wide open, but always veiled. okay, August 5th, 1958.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start with timing again. I think that's a key. Well, this is very interesting. Are you in a relationship?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Many.
Well, this is really important for you. The most important relationships in your life that have to do with family, home, you know, the home front, so to speak, need your attention
exactly.
This year. And
boy,
the reason
are you right.
For that is that there's a lot of new, you know, I don't like to use this word because it's a real cliche, but there's a lot of new energy around that later in the year. And about 4 months from now, your world is going to start rocking in a different way. And the good news about that is that you have so many opportunities to look ahead 10 years. The bad news around that is you better get ready for that. Because if not, you're going to think, oh, my God, what's happened to my world? When you're ready for it, when you're thinking along those lines, you're going to be going, right, that's exactly what I had in mind. You need to be thinking ahead to the year 2024. Don't think ahead 1 year. Start to create in your own mind's eye an idea of where you want to be in 10 years from now. You don't have to stick to it. It's not the law of attraction. You're not creating something. What you're doing is just moving. Let me tell you a little story. There was a great, wonderful delegation of American business people that went to visit the Japanese when they were making money back in the 80s. And when they went to visit one of the elders of one of the larger companies, I think it was Mitsubishi, but I don't remember, they asked the CEO, who was in his late 80s, do you plan ahead? And he said, yes, of course. And they said, well, sir, how far do you plan ahead? And he said, so sorry, only 300 years. Well, when Americans hear that, they always giggle. When people from the East hear that, they go, well, that's not bad, about 300 years, that's about right. Well, somewhere in the middle is good. if you're a parent, you have to know that what you say has an impact for generations, not just how you feel tomorrow. You're on the radio. What you say has tremendous impact, whether you're aware of it or not, not just in your, you know, your ratings, but that people are listening to you, and they may be saying something or be moved by something you've said in ways that you don't realize, and it may impact them in another way for a long term. You have that impact, and that impact is going to be increasing later in the year. It's a long way to put it. And by the way, whatever you experienced earlier on in life, whatever power struggles there were in your family, I don't want to go into detail, none of my business, but you really do have to let that go now, because you have a very oriental mind. An oriental mind is like a universal mind. That's the type of person who likes to see the whole picture from above and doesn't really want to get caught up in things that will take away their sense of power. And you're right on that. Nothing should do that. You were born to communicate, and now you have to do it in a very, very organized way starting in September, the end of September.
That makes a lot of sense. We are in the middle of big things. Teresa and I are finishing up, hopefully really soon, a book. And it's a big deal for both of us. That's the brand. That's the America's Most Haunted brand. And we certainly see that as a major step forward, potentially life-changing. It's a brand that could continue on and not just be kind of a single-focused thing. So that's one part of it. Family, it makes lots of sense. I've kind of been struggling. Part of it, I think, is some of my frustration with not living up to all my own ideals, but I've been, for whatever reason, and I haven't even exactly understood it myself, I've kind of been harder on people and more demanding, even than usual, and I'm pretty demanding, as Teresa knows, on people in my family, and kind of even more than usual. And,
then balance it with kindness, because there are two ways to be kind. One is wussy, which really isn't kind at all, and the other is a little more ruthless. So if you have a little bit of more of a ruthless kindness, it means that you will see other people and you will behave. Let me backtrack a little bit. You know the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you? It's a terrible idea. It does not work. It's a wonderful thing to teach children because it teaches them empathy. But after that, you got to drop it. It's better to say, do unto others as they're going to get it. Do unto others as they'll understand. That's kindness. So when you're communicating, especially to people who you want to push a little bit, do it in a way that they're going to get. And that's kind.
That's
and that will
great.
Have great impact for you. Doesn't matter where you can see them or not. Even if you're working in a parallel form, it still has the same impact.
I also really like what you said about communication in general, because as someone who's been in the communication business one way or another, writer, author, internet, radio, TV, internet radio, I'm not sure if it's actually different, but the delivery system is different. I'm someone who's been communicating, and I probably don't always take that as seriously as I might in terms of the responsibility, because that is a responsibility. And I know that I have things that I can and should convey. That's one of my driving forces, is I need to spread information and I need to inform people. And I'm sure some of it's ego, but I do feel kind of an underlying compulsion that doesn't feel like ego anyway.
That's
that
fine.
I have something to give, and I need to get it out there. And so
that's very well said. The only thing that I would caution you on is that you have to be careful to be not reactive, because when you're reactive, you're not awake, you're not conscious, and you know the reactivity is a short-term benefit. It's like, wow, that feels really good. I got that off my chest. But then you have to pay for that. And that can be very expensive. So You know, this is something I tell people all the time. Just because it's on your mind doesn't mean it's true. Just because you feel it doesn't mean it's valuable. It might be, but it doesn't guarantee that it is. So it doesn't have to be said. It doesn't have to be expressed. You have to think about it first and think about whether or not it will impact the other person. If it will, then it might be worthwhile. If not, you know, it might not be worth it.
That is
very meaningful, and I need to ponder that rather deeply. Teresa, you're not getting out of this.
I'm fascinated by that last comment. I mean, basically, it's, you know, think before you speak, right? I mean,
I would
right.
think no before you speak. Right? Thinking is overrated. I mean, you folks deal in paranormal. Intuition's a lot faster than thought. Nobody has time to think anymore. You have to use your intuition. This is a test I give people all the time. The test is you're driving down the street, a little voice comes to your head and says, turn left. You turn left just before the cement truck comes and it would have rolled right over you. Was that intuition? The answer is no. That's a premonition. It's a feeling. You pick up the phone, and even before you pick it up, you know who's ringing. You know who's on the line besides caller ID, the old phone. How do you know? Well, that's a premonition. You just know. Intuition is faster than that. Intuition's already being at the right place at the right time. It's faster than the speed of light. It's faster than the speed of thought. It's the only defense system a human has, and it's something that every human has. And that's what you've got, is that intuition. And you guys play with that all the time. It's one of your teaching tools. Okay, so what's your birthday?
My birthday is December 18th, 1965.
Okay. So you want the good news or the bad news?
Give it to me both. I'll take it both.
Okay. I'm going to start with the bad news.
Okay.
There are times in your life where things have just gone dark. Sometimes it happens for a moment, and sometimes it happens for a longer period. That's the bad news. It's like the lights go out, and no one understands it but you. Here's the good news. You get over it. Not everybody does. And you really need to know that you always get over it, but it doesn't happen that way for everybody. So one of the tools that you have available to you is that caring quality that you carry around, that tremendous sensitivity, that phenomenal integrity, but the need to accept. You're a person who must, in her lifetime, build an institution. It could be a home, could be a family, it could be a school, it could be a hospital, it could be all of the above. And you will have the resources to do it, because you also have the gift of manifesting, which means when you say so, it happens. The only problem you have is that little bit of insecurity I talked about before. You have some of this, you know. Someone once asked a very great master, how do you drop insecurity? And he said like this, and he picked up a glass and dropped it. He said, it's that simple. But it made a mess. There's glass everywhere and water everywhere. But all you have to do is drop it. When you feel insecure, you've got to drop it. And then everything's fine. One of the problems you have in your life is that you don't understand why people talk so much. When you were a kid, you could finish people's sentences in your head before they said it. And you couldn't understand, why do people talk so much? Why don't they just know? And then later on in life, you had to develop this whole personality in order to communicate with people. Well, you're one of those intuitive people who has this inspiration that you bring to others and must come from you first. Whatever pain you've experienced in your life, whatever accidents, diseases, irritations, annoyances that you've experienced physically in your life, it has been a gift for you, an absolute gift. And you've taken the pain away from other people just enough that you could bring a nobility forward. It's a very powerful life you have. Now, this is your year of you. So while there are some things that are falling away from you, you're really you. I mean, who you are is so highlighted this year. It's so strong. But it may not go in the direction that you want it to go in. So you have to be very relaxed all year. because if you push for things this year, you're going to be disappointed. If you relax a little bit this year, then you're going to find that things sort of move in a flow that maybe are a little bit different than what you expected, but better.
It all makes a lot of sense to me, everything you've said. What you said about the dark time, I'm a little nervous about, not about falling back into the dark times.
You won't.
About others around me thinking I'm going to fall back into that time.
They'll get over it.
Yeah.
They'll get over it. You're a big girl.
Yeah, and that's how I feel. I feel that, and like you said, I feel that what's happened in my past has brought me to where I'm at now. So
yeah.
As much as sometimes I wish I could forget about it or erase it, I really don't, because it was every action I did had a reaction that's gotten me to where I'm at now. And I'm apprehensive about things that are happening in the future, and because I don't know where I know where I want to go, and I know
I
what
don't I don't believe you at all. I don't know why you have created that personality of fear. I don't know why you have it. I don't know why you're using it, but it's not true. I'm looking at your chart. You have no fear. So the fact that you keep using that word, I don't know where it came from. I don't know why you've created it. It's some sort of insecure, fake thing that you do, because maybe it gives you time to think, or maybe your nervous system's a little bit weak, which you should correct quickly, because it only takes about a month to fix that, and then you're back on track. You're not a fearful person, so please stop talking that way. It's just not true.
No, I'm not.
With all due respect.
Fear is not the right word. I'm not so much fearful, but... Well, what is the word then? Maybe not...
You're a little insecure, and you have to get over it as quickly as you can.
Yeah, it's...
You're not apprehensive. You have people who can manifest things aren't apprehensive. You can create anything. You can say it so, and it shows up. How many times have you looked for a parking spot and said, there's the parking spot, and there it was?
Not on Black Friday, but...
You know, I remember once I was talking to somebody who was more experienced than me about 20 or 30 years ago, and he said, you know, all these people who, they pray for a parking spot, or they pray to pass their exams, or they pray, you know, to have that relationship. Why don't you pray to get $950 million? Just fix everything. Pray to get it all. That's not greedy. If you have the ability to manifest what's there, then manifest it. And that's you. Every time you're apprehensive, you just have to take a step back and go, what needs to manifest here? Good. Well, then let it be so. That's the strength you have. You don't want it. That's fine. Then you have to deal with conflict. That's the other side of it. If you want it, step into it. The glass slipper is yours. The difference, it's not glass, it's platinum.
Teresa, you know what I think? I've been reading, the way we're working on this book is Teresa is the experienced and insightful paranormal investigator. I'm a novice in the field. I'm the writer, quote unquote, the professional writer, and I certainly have my own opinions and my own thoughts, and I'm not shy about putting those in. But ultimately, the way the book's coming out, we've selected the 10 most haunted locations in the country that are public or semi-public, and then giving pretty detailed descriptions of them and the stories associated with them and the whatever history we can locate, and just kind of trying to take things to a little bit deeper level than you typically find on these haunted location books. So my point is, a lot of this is from Teresa's perspective. And I noticed that a lot of the time she's kind of careful to say, well, I'm not a sensitive. I'm not a clairvoyant. I'm not a whatever term is being used, but sensitive is probably the most recurrent one. And I think, you know what? I think that's just not true. I think you are.
Actually, I think you're concerned about it. I think it's a very brave step to say that. In other words, if you're declaring, no, I'm not a psychic, what you're really saying is, I'm a normal person who has the sensitivity that everybody has, but I'm very tuned into this. I'm very aware of this. And as a consequence, my empathy is more, and my inspiration follows. I think there's a certain degree of sophistication in that.
That makes
those
sense.
Those are my 3 cents.
I think some of the pushback, just to finish that thought, some of the pushback, Teresa, that you seem to get so often from these entities, right, who decide to single you out and hurl abuse in your direction, I think they are frightened of you. I think they feel that you have some sort of power. And I think that's why they respond that way. I don't think it's anything, you know, personal. It's not your hair, you know. I think there's a reason for that, and it's probably something that reflects on something that you possess, something that you wield. That there's something there that they're afraid of, that they're kind of cringing away from.
Well, I tell you, I'm not afraid when I go on investigations or when I'm doing research or in a haunted location or a place I think is haunted. I have no fear of that. I'm not afraid of anything I may encounter. You know, I'm more afraid of, and again, I use that word probably in the wrong way, but, you know,
yes,
I'm
you are using it the wrong way.
I don't want my
you can't
want my
use that word.
A playground or something, but that's the only thing that would strike fear in me.
You can't use that word.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say. You know, words have that kind of impact. You know that. I was once teaching my son. He was being admonished for something, and I said, you know, you have to be careful what you say. And he was very concerned, and he said, wait a minute. All I said was one word. And I said, yeah, one word can make or break your life. You have to be responsible for that, like the word yes or the word no. And if you are using the word fear, you have to make a decision. You're either afraid or you're not. If you're not, don't discuss it again. If you are saying, I have no fear in my work, but I do around my children because that's the way I love them, is I'm afraid something will happen to them, then that's a little nutty. What you want to do instead is say, I have no fear. The same trust and faith that I have working with the unknown, I have for my own family. Of course it makes me nervous when I love people that I know. I don't want anything to happen to them because I'm a little insecure and I don't want them to go away. But on the other hand, you're not a child anymore, nor are you simply an adult. You are now very masterful in what you do. So that's a new level of integrity for you. And I'm inviting you to take that level of integrity very seriously and reflect it in how you say things, because that's all you've got. That's the power of what you say is so strong. It's called the power to manifest. You know, in the old days, it was called the blessing and the curse, that what you said would either happen as a blessing or what you said would happen as
a
curse.
Yeah, it's like a spell, right?
Well, that's not in this century. Now it's just the power of your word. And in your case, Teresa, this is your ability to manifest. So you have to be careful what you say. I'm sorry, I don't want to nag you on this, but I want to make sure the point is clear. Don't just say, well, maybe I shouldn't use that word. No, you absolutely shouldn't use that word, because it doesn't suit you. You are who you are everywhere.
Mm. Wow. Well, I am definitely going to chew on those words. And
that's good. You are what you say, and you eat your own words. Chew away.
You're right. Well, words really do have meaning. Words have power. Words are connected. We were watching one of the just last night, one of the Morgan Freeman Through the Wormholes, and this was talking about, it was looking at the connection between the brain and language, and we can't even really think without language. You know, it's possible, the guy, they were saying, maybe you can think visually, but for the most part, you can't even think without words. That's how important words and language are, and the meaning that they convey. So I that makes really good sense to me too, that you do have to be careful what you say, and words do have meaning, and no one is perfect, and things may slip out. And I mean, honestly, I just had a big fight with my wife.
Don't do that again.
Terrible.
This is where you say things slip out. They shouldn't. I know everybody says, well, you know, this happens, not perfect. It's not true. It's not true. Excuses are abuses. That's one of the things I teach in my leadership programs. Excuses are abuses. If you can say, well, I'm not perfect, well, but you have to be. You there's no reason for you to have a fight with somebody. There's no reason for you to let something slip. That's not who you are. That's not the caliber of who you are. Might happen when you're 12. But at this stage in the game, you know, right here in Canada, there was a woman, I won't say her name, but there was a woman on television who used a wrong word to describe a particular race. She was gone. That was it. Her career was over in 1 second.
Oh.
It was over. And that you've seen that happen a few times. I think there was somebody recently in television who just went through that one word, and their career is over. You do have to be careful what you say. And numbers are another way to provide a communication tool. It's another kind of, instead of letters, it's numbers, and they form a different kind of communication, a different way to understand something. I sure appreciate you taking the time to talk to me tonight about this. It's a lot of fun.
I love how we started talking about numbers and ended up talking about words. Amazing.
Very interesting.
Absolutely.
Well, we didn't even get into a lot of it, so we'd love to have you back if that is cool.
That would be
awesome. Sure, we'll figure that out. We'll see when the timing is perfect.
What's your website? Tell our listeners where they can find out about you and your programs and all that good stuff.
Yes.
Sure, absolutely. You can reach me at yogiacall.com. That's yogi like Yogi Bear. Acall, A-K-A-L, yogiacall.com. Or if you're interested in the numerology, numerologyprofessor.com, and that's where the course is.
Excellent.
Fascinating. Well,
a lot
thank
of fun,
you
folks.
So much.
I appreciate being welcomed into your lives. And I know the work that you're going to do in the next few years is really going to be liberating for both of you.
Thank you very much. Much to ponder. And usually we're the ones... pinning people down and questioning them. I think we were under the microscope a bit tonight. So turning the tables, it's change, and change is good.
Change is good.
All right, thank you very much, Yogi Acall. Have a great evening, and we would love to have you back on down the line, and we will make sure to lay the groundwork in advance next time to make sure that people know that they can call, and we will do more of a general call-in type show. But I'm perfectly fine with, you know, being able to talk to you also this evening and to get a lot of this background and have a much better understanding of where you're coming from. And, of course, selfishly, we got to partake of your expertise. But next time around, we will definitely go more into a call mode, and that'll be a lot of fun, too, just to hear how that goes.
Well, thank you very much, and have a great numerological evening.
And you
thank
as well.
You.
Thank you.
You
good
too.
Good night, Eric. I'll give you a call.
Bye-bye.
Good night.